Today we have an extra creepy, strange case. This is a true story. This is a mystery, a conspiracy. And this is truly one of the most frustrating cases I have ever covered, and you're gonna hear why. Let's get right into it. Kurt Silva was 17 years old, and by all accounts, he was the kind of teenager parents don't usually worry about. He lived in a quiet neighborhood outside Cleveland, Ohio, wasn't known for drinking or running with a dangerous crowd. He stayed out of trouble, wasn't a big partier, and he always came home. But on a Friday night in October 1981, Kurt walked out of his house on what should have been a completely ordinary Friday night. 5 days later, he was found dead. All these years later, no one can explain exactly what happened to him. The accounts and witnesses from this mystery are strange, to say the least. The last time anyone in Kurt's family saw him was late in the afternoon on Friday, October 23rd, 1981. He left home expecting to only be gone for a few hours. Just a block away, he ran into a friend named Sam, and during their conversation, Sam mentioned a Halloween party that was taking place that night in nearby Newborough Heights. It sounded like a typical teenage get-together, and the two boys decided to go. As the evening wore on, Kurt never returned home. For most teenagers, that might not seem unusual, but according to his mother, Dorothy, this was completely out of character for her son. Kurt was not the type to disappear for days at a time. He rarely even stayed out all night. Normally, he would be home by 10 or 11 o'clock, and if he planned to stay out later, his parents almost always knew where he was. That Friday night came and went, and Kurt never walked through the front door. By Saturday morning, Dorothy was concerned and started calling Kurt's friends one by one, hoping someone had seen him. Meanwhile, Kurt's father, Ken, got in his car and began searching the area himself. He drove through neighborhoods, checked local hangouts, and visited every place he thought his son could have been. But hours passed and the situation was becoming increasingly alarming. Kurt was not showing back up. Additionally, after talking to his friends, no one seemed to know where Kurt was. By Sunday, his parents knew something was very wrong. Ken and Dorothy officially reported their son missing to police. At the same time, the family launched a search effort of their own. They checked schoolyards, parks, fields, ravines. There were missing persons flyers all over town, but no trace of Kurt. Then, on Sunday afternoon, the family finally got a break. While speaking with some of Kurt's friends, Dorothy learned more about the Halloween party Kurt had attended on Friday night. This was their first real lead. The gathering had reportedly taken place inside a duplex on Harvard Street in Newborough Heights, less than 2 miles from the Silva house. She is hoping someone could tell her what happened after Kurt arrived at this party. Dorothy immediately gets in her car and drives to this address. The apartment was rented by a woman named Susan. When Dorothy knocked on the door, a woman answered, but it wasn't Susan. This woman explained that she was only babysitting and that Susan was currently at work. But Dorothy is desperate for answers, so she began asking questions about the party. Does this woman know anything about the party? Does she know her son? Had she heard anything about Kurt? Or had anyone mentioned where he went afterward? Unfortunately, this babysitter claimed she didn't know anything about the Halloween party. With really no other options, Dorothy asked her to have Susan call as soon as she returned home. And although she doesn't have any information yet, at that moment, this was really the first bit of information the family had. When Susan finally returned home, she called Dorothy back. Now, you would think this conversation would bring even more information, but what this woman said only added to the confusion. Because according to Susan, there had been no party at the duplex. She claimed she had never seen Kurt that night and knew nothing about his disappearance. Wait, what? This didn't make sense. Friends are saying, yeah, there was a Halloween party at this address on this night and Kurt was there. But this woman's saying, oh no, there was no get-together. I don't know what you're talking about. And for that moment, it seemed like the family's only lead had just slipped through their fingers. But then, another witness came forward. A pizza delivery driver reached out to Dorothy and told her that there was absolutely a party at the duplex on Friday night. He knew that because he had personally delivered food to the get-together. With this information, Dorothy contacts Susan again. And this time, the story changed. Dorothy essentially tells Susan, "I know there was a party at your apartment that night. I have spoken with a pizza delivery driver. He is confirming what everyone else is saying, that there was a party at your apartment." And then Susan admitted that, yes, there had been a party, and she acknowledged that she saw Kurt there. He had attended. In fact, more than a dozen people had reportedly stopped by throughout the evening. Many of them were older than Kurt, and according to those who knew him, most were people he had never met before. These were strangers. It wasn't his usual crowd or group of friends that his family was used to him hanging around. And what Dorothy heard next was even more troubling. Susan told her that Kurt had been drinking heavily throughout the night. His drink of choice was reportedly Everclear. Some of you may already know what Everclear is, but if you don't, it is a notoriously potent alcohol, so strong that it's actually been banned and restricted in several states. And for Kurt's family, this is shocking because, according to those closest to him, Kurt wasn't much of a drinker. He was relatively small in stature, and those who knew him said he had a very little tolerance for alcohol. And Dorothy had never known her son or his close friends to drink heavily. Okay, so this conversation has revealed that there was a party there after this woman initially told Dorothy that there wasn't, and also that her son was drinking heavily. Additionally, this was not his normal group of friends. This was a completely different crowd. You may be thinking, well, why don't you talk to Sam? He was the friend that Kurt went to this party with. And as investigators pieced together the events of that evening, Sam actually provided what would become one of the most important and baffling accounts of the night. According to Sam, Kurt had become increasingly intoxicated as the party went on. At one point, he was stumbling around the apartment, bumping into things and knocking items over. Eventually, he became sick. According to the story, Susan asked Sam to take him outside and get him some fresh air. Around 9:30 that evening, Sam led Kurt out the front of the duplex. It was October in the Midwest, so it was chilly outside. Sam said he left Kurt leaning against a fence while he ran back inside, upstairs, to retrieve his jacket. This should have only taken a minute or two, but when he returned, Sam said Kurt was gone. Sam began looking around, searching the area outside, behind the duplex, calling out for him, but he couldn't find him. Eventually, he assumed Kurt had decided to walk home on his own. After all, Kurt's house was less than 2 miles away, but as we know, Kurt never made it home. And something else, the jacket Sam had said he had gone to retrieve was later found still sitting inside the duplex, which maybe he brought it back inside after he couldn't find Kurt, but that's just another detail. For Dorothy, this is really a parent's worst nightmare, and she is trying to piece together what happened, but she's becoming more and more fearful. A 17-year-old boy, heavily intoxicated, had seemingly vanished into the night without a trace. And adding to her fear, she knows that the woman that hosted this party had initially not told her the truth. She denied knowing Kurt. Then, when she was confronted, she reportedly admitted, "Well, yeah, I did have a party and I did see your son." At this point, she is convinced that something terrible had happened to Kurt. Whether it occurred at the party itself or somewhere along the route home, she believed Kurt encountered trouble. What she didn't know was that this mystery surrounding his disappearance was about to become far stranger than anyone could have ever imagined. 5 days after Kurt Sova vanished, The search finally came to an end. On October 28, 1981, Kurt's body was discovered in a ravine behind a warehouse on Harvard Street in Newborough Heights. The location was startling. He was found less than 500 yards from the duplex where he had last been seen alive. For days, family members, friends, volunteers, and police had searched for him. Yet somehow, Kurt's body ended up lying in an area extremely close to the place where the disappearance began. And almost immediately, investigators began questioning whether he had died there at all. Lieutenant Robert Carraras of the Newborough Heights Police Department believed the body had likely been placed in the ravine after death. In his view, whoever left Kurt there was familiar with the area. They knew it was secluded enough to avoid immediate discovery, but not so isolated that he would remain hidden forever. Sooner or later, someone was going to find him, and eventually they did. As detectives processed the scene, they uncovered another strange detail. Kurt's left tennis shoe was found lodged between rocks less than 12 feet from his body. His right shoe, however, had vanished. Where was the shoe? This could be another clue into what happened. But despite extensive searches, it was never recovered. And this only raised more questions. Had Kurt lost the shoe while wandering through the area? Or was it evidence that something had happened somewhere else entirely? Kurt's body was transported to the county coroner's office, where investigators hoped the autopsy would finally provide some answers. Instead, it only deepened the mystery. The coroner determined that Kurt had died approximately 24 to 36 hours before his body was discovered. Now, this was shocking because if accurate, it meant Kurt had been alive for at least 3 days after he disappeared from the Halloween party. 3 days. Where had he been in that time? This is something no one could account for. No one could say with certainty where Kurt had been. But this was the most baffling finding. The medical examiner could not determine exactly how Kurt died. Former Chief Deputy Coroner Lester Aldison would later explain that the conclusion was reached largely through the process of elimination. So it went something like this. Investigators searched for evidence of trauma. They didn't find any. Then they looked for signs of beating, an assault, or a serious accident. Again, they didn't find anything. But what about the alcohol? That was such a big part of what that woman said, had told Dorothy that Kurt was drinking Everclear, a very, very strong alcohol. Well, Kurt's blood alcohol level was tested, and they found it to be at 0.11. This was elevated, but nowhere near high enough by itself to explain his death several days later. There were no hard drugs found in his system, no evidence of any underlying disease that was discovered. They found no heart conditions or natural illness. There was no obvious explanation as to how Kurt died. And according to Adelson, they were left with what he called a diagnosis by exclusion, meaning everything that should have explained Kurt's death was absent. And so the death certificate reflected this baffling conclusion. It read, a probable accidental death caused by what was described as a instantaneous physiologic death. If you just heard that and are thinking, what does that even mean? In simpler terms, Kurt Sova was dead, but no one could explain why. Up until this, Kurt was a healthy, happy young man, and then suddenly, instantaneous death? As you can imagine for his family, this answer was impossible to accept. Because if no one knew how Kurt died, then how could anyone know what really happened that night and during those missing days? For Dorothy Sova, this autopsy did not bring much comfort. In fact, it left her with more questions. Officially, the manner of death was signed out as probable accidental because they essentially eliminated everything else. Dorothy never fully accepted the coroner's conclusion. And with time, she came to believe that officials may have settled on uncertain explanation simply to provide the family with some measure of closure. But Dorothy didn't want closure. She wanted to find out what happened to her son. She wanted the truth. Investigators believed that Kurt was moved. So who moved his body? Why was he found where he was? Where was his missing shoe? What had happened during those missing days? Questions like this kept her awake at night, and along with the rest of the family, Dorothy started looking closely at a series of strange events that had occurred while her son was missing. Some of them were difficult to explain, strange. Others were downright eerie. One very chilling account came from a friend of Kurt's named David Trisnick. David claimed that on Monday, 3 days after Kurt vanished, he was driving to a job interview. He was in his car, driving down the road, when he looks out his window and spots someone walking along a busy street less than a mile from the Sova home. Why did he notice this person? Because it looked exactly like his friend, Kurt Sova. According to David, Kurt wasn't alone. He was walking with another teenage boy, but David didn't recognize this other young man. David didn't know anything was wrong. He didn't know that Kurt was missing at this time. So David pulled his car over, said, hey, and offered them a ride. You know, this is his friend. He knows Kurt. He's known him for years. He sees him walking along the side of the road. So he thinks, hey, yeah, let me offer my friend a ride. Then something strange happened. Before either boy could respond, a van suddenly pulled up nearby. David recalled Kurt calling out a name, Franco. Then both Kurt and the other boy immediately ran toward the vehicle and climbed inside. Then the van quickly drove away. So as we covered at this time, David had no idea that Kurt was considered missing. Had he known, he later said he would have followed the van or tried to find out where it was going. But instead, he just thought, geez, that's kind of strange, and continued on his way to his job interview. Then 2 days later, Kurt's body was discovered. If David's account was accurate, it would mean Kurt was alive nearly 3 days after leaving the Halloween party, a timeline that closely matched the coroner's estimate of when he died. Okay, so I want you to take a beat, take a breath, because it's about to get even stranger. David's sighting wasn't the only strange incident reported in those missing days. That same Monday, a mysterious stranger appeared. According to witnesses, a man had been seen wandering around the Sova's neighborhood and hanging out around town when he stopped inside a local record store. Displayed in the window was one of Kurt's missing person flyers. The stranger stared at it for a moment before walking inside. Then he said something chilling. According to the store manager, the man pointed towards the flyer and said, "You might as well take that down." The manager is confused and looks over at the missing persons poster and then asks why. His response was unsettling. This man said, "They're going to find him dead in 2 days. Nobody's gonna know why he died." Then, this mysterious man simply walked out of the store. At the time, the manager dismissed the comment as rambling of some eccentric stranger. But the next morning, things got even more bizarre. Before the store even opened, someone had left flowers outside the entrance. Alongside them was a handwritten note. The message read, "Roses are red. The sky is blue. They found him dead, and they'll find you too." The store manager immediately contacted police. Police hear about all this and think, okay, we need to talk to this man. So investigators located and questioned this individual. And according to reports, authorities concluded that he was a mentally unstable drifter from Detroit and did not consider him a credible suspect. And since Kurt was only listed missing at this point, there was no evidence linking the man to any crime, and he was released. Then, just days later, Kurt's body was discovered. And by that time, this strange man had disappeared. Whether this man possessed some sort of knowledge about what happened to Kurt, or was this just a disturbed individual making comments that turned out to be a very chilling coincidence, that is unknown. But for many people following the case, it was yet another bizarre piece of this puzzle.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.
But next, we need to talk about the phone call. Another development in this mystery. In the early morning hours of October 28th, the very day Kurt's body would be discovered, Dorothy Sova received an unexpected phone call. It was around 3:30 in the morning. The caller was Susan, the woman who had hosted the Halloween party. And what she said immediately caught Dorothy's attention. According to Susan, there was someone sleeping in the basement of the duplex. She said, perhaps it was Kurt. This call made very little sense for Dorothy. At that point, Susan had already given multiple conflicting accounts of what happened the night Kurt disappeared, for she denied there had ever been a party. Then she admitted there was a party, and yeah, Kurt attended. Each conversation seemed to bring a different version of events. So why was she calling now at 3:30 in the morning? And also, what do you mean, perhaps it's Kurt? Well, is it or isn't it? Dorothy wasn't sure whether to believe her, but if there was even the slightest chance that Kurt was alive, the family couldn't ignore it. Dorothy tells her husband about the call, and Ken immediately gets up, hops in the car, and heads to the duplex. Their minds are racing with possibilities. Maybe Kurt had been hiding there. Maybe he had gotten injured or hit his head or was sick. Whatever the situation, Ken hoped he would finally find his son alive. He got to the property and made his way down to the basement. And what he found only added another layer to the mystery. There, in the basement, was a cot, and it appeared as though someone had recently slept in it. There was a blanket that was all crumpled. The space looked occupied. Yet after thoroughly searching the basement, calling out for Kurt, he found no sign of Kurt or anyone else. Whoever had been there was gone. Ken always remained convinced that someone had slept in that cot the previous night, but when he got there, the person was gone. And for Dorothy, this basement would become a central piece of her theory. She came to believe that Kurt had been there at some point during the days he was missing, wondering if he had been possibly recovering from alcohol poisoning, given that it was said he was drinking Everclear and supposedly got sick that night. Perhaps something happened and he did become hurt or was sick. She feared perhaps he had died there. In Dorothy's view, panic may have set in among the other people at the party. They're faced with a sick or dying teenager. Someone may have decided to move the body rather than call for help. Whether that theory is correct, it's never been proven, but one fact continued to bother Kurt's parents. According to Ken, he had personally searched that very ravine where Kurt was eventually discovered, approximately 24 hours before the body was found, and he insisted there was nothing there. There was no trace of Kurt, no body, because the last time Kurt was seen, he was wearing a bright yellow t-shirt. And Ken said he would have definitely noticed that bright colored clothing against the surrounding terrain, because of course you would. It's super bright. So to him, it was obvious if Kurt wasn't there when he looked, then someone may have placed him there later. That possibility was deeply troubling, and as Kurt's family continued to search for answers, another strange coincidence would emerge just months after Kurt's death. 3 months later, a 13-year-old named Eugene Cavett, someone Kurt had known, was found dead in another ravine along Harvard Street. The similarities immediately caught people's attention. Like Kurt, Eugene had been missing before his body was discovered. Also, similar to Kurt, one of his shoes was never found. And like Kurt, he was located in a ravine not far from where Kurt's body had been recovered. And for a time period, many wondered whether these two cases were somehow connected. But investigators ultimately concluded that Eugene's death was accidental, determining that he had died after falling into the ravine. But for Kurt's parents, his family, his friends, those who have followed Kurt's case, this was just yet another question to add to the list. Because there are so many, more than 40 years later. It's a mystery. Where was Kurt Sova the 5 days he was missing? Who, if anyone, was with him during that time? And if his body was moved, who put him there? Those answers may still be out there. But as of now, it's just one of Ohio's most disturbing mysteries. In many unsolved cases, investigators can at least answer some of the fundamental questions. But not here. Even today, no one can say with certainty how Kurt died. In that 5-day period between the Halloween party and Kurt being found, where was he? What happened? It's a mystery whether he was ever in the basement of the duplex. For Kurt's parents, that uncertainty never went away, and my heart breaks for them. Years after losing their son, Ken would say that they knew little more than they did on the day they first began searching for him. In his mind, someone knows exactly what happened. Someone has always known. They have simply chosen not to talk, and Dorothy felt the same way. She often said that she would never find peace until she learned the truth about what happened to her son, and she made it clear that she had no intention of ever giving up the search. As she put it, she would keep looking for answers until the day she was buried herself, because she simply could not accept the official explanation, what the coroner said. A healthy 17-year-old boy doesn't just vanish for 5 days only to reappear dead in a ravine that had already been searched with no clear cause of death. At least not in Dorothy's eyes. Over the years, several people have attracted suspicion. One of the most frequently discussed is Susan, the woman who hosted the Halloween party. After Kurt disappeared, she initially denied that any party had taken place at all. Only after being confronted with the evidence from the pizza delivery driver did she change her story and admit Kurt had been there that night. Then came the mysterious 3:30 a.m. phone call, the one in which she told Dorothy that someone might be sleeping in the basement of the duplex, maybe it's Kurt. Then, only hours later, Kurt's body would be discovered less than 500 yards from her duplex. None of this proves Susan had anything to do with Kurt's death, but the contradictions in timing have definitely fueled questions for decades. Another very talked about figure is the strange man from the record store, that same man who allegedly predicted that Kurt would be found dead in 2 days before it happened. There was something else. According to reports, he had made many claims about having access to bodies arriving at Cleveland Hopkins Airport. Reports also said he reportedly bragged about removing shoes from corpses, a detail that definitely caught attention after one of Kurt's shoes was never recovered. Despite these very strange statements and that threatening note he left behind for the record store manager, investigators ultimately concluded that this man was mentally disturbed, and found no evidence linking him to Kurt's death. And as we covered, he left the area, and as far as anyone knows, he was never seen in the area ever again. Then there's the mystery that my mind keeps coming back to, which is the mystery of Franco. If David Triznick's sighting is accurate, Kurt was seen alive on Monday, 3 days after he vanished. And just before running to a waiting van, he reportedly called out a single name, Franco. Who is Franco? This clearly wasn't someone that David recognized. It wasn't one of their friends that they hung out with regularly. Why did Kurt seem to recognize him, and where did that van go? I have looked through articles and reports, and to this day, investigators have never publicly identified the man, this Franco. Police have also believed that if Kurt's body was moved, that the person responsible likely knew the area well. As we discussed, this ravine was sort of out of the way, but not so out of the way that no one would ever come across it. But there is one last bit of information that I want to share with you, and this is maybe the most haunting piece of information. This came from a witness whose story was never fully investigated. I don't know why. But shortly before Kurt's body was discovered, a local woman reportedly witnessed two young men dragging what appeared to be an unconscious teenage boy down an alley toward the ravine. One detail stood out. She remembered that one of the boy's feet appeared to be bare. At this time, she assumed she was witnessing just a group of intoxicated teenagers messing around. And that's why she actually did not contact police about this. She told her husband about it. And her husband reportedly told her to stay out of it and mind their own business. But after Kurt's body was found, and after learning that one of his shoes was missing, she really began to wonder what she saw. What did she witness? Was this connected? About a year later, she happened to meet Kurt's father and shared the story. And yes, the Sovas passed this information along to investigators, yet for reasons that remain unclear, police never formally interviewed her. I have looked, I have searched through the articles and reports from this case. I don't know why. Why? There's so much about this mystery that is so frustrating and heartbreaking because, yes, there are so many unanswered questions here, but there's also this feeling that somewhere among these conflicting stories and overlooked witnesses, missing days, unexplained clues, the truth about what happened to Kurt may be right there. Instead, the mystery remains. A 17-year-old boy leaves for a Halloween party, expecting to come home a few hours later. 5 days later, he's found dead less than 500 yards from where he was last seen. It's been decades of theories, investigations, speculation, and nobody's ever been able to explain what happened to Kurt Sova. And you may be listening to this and thinking, this is so troubling, but I'm going to tell you something. What happened after the investigation may be even more disturbing. For years, Kurt's family and those close to him suspected that the original investigation had been mishandled. And as time passed, those concerns only grew stronger. Eventually, it appeared they may have had good reason to question the investigation. In the years following Kurt's death, multiple members of the Newborough Heights Police Department became entangled in scandals and criminal investigations. Officers were arrested and accused of a wide range of misconduct, including falsifying credentials, corruption, and drug-related offenses. Perhaps most troubling was the fate of Lieutenant Robert Carraras, who, if you remember, was the lead investigator in Kurt's case. Years later, Carraras was exposed as a drug addict and was accused of abusing prisoners in his custody. According to court records, he allegedly transported a handcuffed prisoner to the very warehouse area where Kurt's body had been discovered. and attempted to provoke a physical confrontation. In 1991, Carrars was convicted of assaulting prisoners and sentenced to prison. While there is no evidence that ever connected him to Kurd's death, these revelations casted a long shadow over the investigation that he oversaw. He was lead investigator. And it wasn't just Kurt's family and friends. Outside agencies reviewed the case, and there was criticism of the original investigation. Pretty widespread. The Cleveland Police Department, the County Sheriff's Office, the Prosecutor's Office, and even the FBI all reportedly examined aspects of this case. And their conclusions were very troubling. Investigators found numerous examples of what they believed to be poor police work. Because if you're already frustrated and you feel like, I am so mad right now, this is going to make you even more upset. No photographs were taken of Kurt's body at the scene. The duplex where he was last seen alive was never thoroughly searched. Written statements were apparently not obtained from many of the partygoers. And despite offers of assistance from larger law enforcement agencies, Newborough Heights police reportedly declined outside help in those early stages of the case. According to Dorothy Silva, many witnesses who came forward with potential leads were never properly interviewed. And she believed that investigators were pretty much dismissing her concerns and just viewed her as a grieving mother unwilling to accept her son's death. But Dorothy never stopped asking questions. Neither did Ken. Neither did the rest of the family. And decades later, the case remained open. Then, November 2019, nearly 38 years after Kurt's mysterious death, there was a surprising development. The Newborough Heights Police Department announced that it was reopening the investigation. Working alongside criminal justice experts from Tiffin University, a team of students and professors began re-examining the evidence, hoping that modern analysis might uncover something that was previously overlooked. And actually, a few months later, February 2020, the case was featured at CrimeCon's Crowd Solve event. There were more than 100 participants, including investigators, forensic experts, and members of the public. It's actually really amazing they worked together to review the evidence and generate new leads. Whether these efforts ever uncovered any new information that has not been publicly revealed, if it has, I couldn't find it. But one thing is clear, this mystery is not forgotten. Today, a reward remains available for any information that could finally explain what happened to Kurt Sova. Tragically, Kurt's father, Ken Sova, passed away in 2001 at the age of 68. His mother, Dorothy, whose determination kept this case alive for decades, passed away in 2014 at the age of 76. Two of Kurt's brothers have also since passed away. Only one remains. His brother Kevin continues to seek answers about what happened that October night in 1981. And so, the case remains open, and somewhere, there may still be someone who knows what happened to Kurt. They simply haven't spoken out yet. And that's where the case stands today. As always, I would love to hear your thoughts on this case. I'm really trying to make an effort to cover more cases like this. You've heard it all. What do you think happened that October night? Let me know your thoughts in the comments. Or hey, leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and give me your thoughts on this case. I always love to hear your take. You always bring up ideas that I hadn't even thought of, and I really appreciate that. Anyone with any information, please contact law enforcement. I will put a phone number and an email in the show notes. Even the smallest detail could be the missing piece that finally provides answers for Kurt's family. I pray and hope that Kurt and both his parents and his brother and family know peace. It's really heart-shattering to hear what happened to this young man and his family. A young man with a big, bright future ahead of him at 17. At 17, you were just so young. You're just starting life, really. It breaks my heart. Be sure to follow along wherever you tune in to Avery After Dark and turn on notifications so you never miss a future episode. And a reminder, you can watch every single Avery After Dark episode on YouTube. I'm linking that in the show notes. Go subscribe. And also, I just want to say something. Know that you listening to this episode, this mystery, is helping reignite interest in this older cold case. And that is how they get solved. We know that's how they get solved. Until next time, this is Avery After Dark.